world's great novels. This is a story written 85 years ago by Edward Everett Hale. A story which has found a place forever in our memories and our hearts. The National Broadcasting Company presents The Man Without a Country. Another in its series of books that live, the world's great novel.
Breathes there the man with soul so dead, who never to himself hath said, "This is my own, my native land," whose heart hath ne'er within him burned, as home his footsteps he hath turned.
There were few who noticed a brief announcement in the New York Herald in the summer of 1863. For one thing, there was other news. News of General Grant's victorious siege of Vicksburg. News that the armies of the North and South were marching over the dusty Pennsylvania roads leading to Gettysburg. Besides, it was an announcement of only a few lines which said, "Nolan died on board the United States corvette Levant, latitude 2 degrees 11 minutes south, longitude 131 degrees west, on the 11th of May, Philip Nolan." But I noticed the announcement that Philip Nolan was dead, that he died at sea on a ship of his nation's navy. I, Fred Ingham, noticed because I'd served in the Navy. I'd met Philip Nolan now and again over the years, and I'd heard talk of him ever since I boarded my first ship.
Sure, I remember Nolan. The Iron Mask, we used to call him.
Oh, Plain Buttons. Hey, he was aboard my first ship. That's more than 30 years ago.
30 years? Well, he's been at sea a half a century, they tell me.
He looks it all right. He's 80 years old, if he's a day, I'd guess.
Philip Nolan was 80 years old and more when he died. And he had been at sea for more than half a century. In all those lonely years, he never once stepped foot on his homeland, nor sighted her shores, nor heard her name spoken. Now, at last, this strange voyage was over. This strange lifetime was ended, leaving only a ripple in the calm waters where he was buried, leaving only a story to be told. They called him the Iron Mask because of his expressionless face. They called him Old Plain Buttons because of his uniform stripped of insignia. And they called him the Man Without a Country because...
Does Lieutenant Nolan care to make any statement regarding his loyalty to the United States?
Damn the United States. I wish I may never hear of the United States again.
It was back in the early years of the New Republic, in the early 1800s, when young Philip Nolan rode southward from his father's Kentucky plantation in search of adventure and a career. He found adventure along the Natchez Trace that followed the Mississippi River to the southwest frontier. And he found a career in the United States Army, a dashing young lieutenant who cut a handsome figure on horseback and in the ballroom. He was in New Orleans, gay city of sunshine and laughter, when a shadow fell across the valley of the Mississippi. The shadow of Aaron Burr, who dreamed of an empire of his own. Young Philip Nolan felt honored to be asked to a party given by the very best people, and was thrilled when Aaron Burr himself took an interest in him, led him away from the others so they might talk in private.
They tell me, Lieutenant Nolan, sir, that you're one of the most brilliant officers in the West.
That's very kind, Mr. Burr.
From what I've heard of your ability, I'm surprised to find that it's still Lieutenant Nolan.
Well, you know how the Army is, sir. Advancements are slow in coming.
Yes, even to the most worthy. And back in Washington, I dare say, they don't even know you exist out here. Indeed, they scarcely know this region exists for all they do about it. In fact, I sometimes wonder if these people here in the Mississippi Valley don't deserve a government of their own. A government more responsible to the people.
I've never thought about it, sir. Of course, there's always talk, but I've never been interested in politics.
If I should find my services useful in helping these good people to secure their rights, I should need the help of men as intelligent and daring as yourself.
Well, I hardly know what to say.
There's no need to say anything. Only remember, there is a tide in the affairs of men, which, taken at its flood, leads on to fortune. We must take the current when it serves or lose our ventures. My friends will be in touch with you, young man.
Oh, Lieutenant, wasn't it thrilling meeting Aaron Burr? I think he's the most distinguished man I've ever seen.
He has ideas, and he seems like a man who wouldn't be afraid of action.
You'd like that about him, wouldn't you? I told him you were, well, a little impulsive.
Impulsive? You mean just because I asked you to show me the rose garden?
Oh, but you asked before our introduction was even completed.
You accepted the suggestion, didn't you?
Well, yes. Mr. Burr said he liked a man who wasn't afraid to take chances. I agree with him. Besides, my father asked me to be nice to you.
Your father? The governor?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't think he even knew I existed. After all, he's a governor of the territory. I'm only an ordinary army lieutenant.
Perhaps there are those who can judge ability, and not just rank. You see, he too was interested in Aaron Burr's ideas to help the region.
Just what are those ideas, I wonder?
I'm sure I wouldn't know. But Father said I might ask you to call sometime. He'd like to talk with you.
Say, maybe I could explain some of my ideas about the conduct of the army here.
Perhaps so. I wouldn't be surprised if General Wilkinson were there, too.
The general? Is he interested in Burr's plan?
Oh, everyone's interested in Aaron Burr. Why, they say he's the kind of man who rewards those who help him.
Say, you're getting pretty high and mighty, Lieutenant. What's this talk about your seeing General Wilkinson?
I think that may be my affair.
Oh? I just wondered. Generals are sending for lieutenants. Doesn't seem much like this man's army.
Maybe there are going to be some changes made in this man's army.
I've heard talk about changes, and not just in the army.
Then maybe you know more than I do.
Oh, come off it, Nolan. Everyone knows there's talk. But of course, I don't have any influential friends to give me the straight information.
Maybe that's just too bad. Or maybe you like the idea of being a lieutenant all your life.
Maybe I do. Better than some other ideas.
Well, maybe I don't. I didn't join up to sit around a barracks year in and year out. Nothing ever happens here. The government doesn't even know we exist. Well, maybe they'll find out someday. Learn to pay a little more attention to us.
Well, when you get things reorganized, remember, I knew you when you were just a lieutenant like myself.
Well, you'll see when the time comes.
But the time never came, for Aaron Burr was seized and accused of treason, of plotting to establish a government of his own in the Mississippi Valley. However, there were only rumors, whispers, suspicions. Those in high places were slowly exonerated. Philip Nolan was so unimportant that his trial was long postponed. When the court finally came to his case, he was treated with an almost contemptuous kindness. Since there was no actual evidence, his trial might have been a mere formality, except...
Yes, sir.
It seems to me that the defendant knew so little about what was going on that his testimony has scant interest. Unfortunately, perhaps, there is no law against being stupid, foolish, and impressionable. However, the defendant was also a soldier. Do you think you wore that uniform with honor, sir? The uniform of the United States?
You can look up my record as a soldier. I used to be told it was a brilliant one.
As far as I can see, it shows that you cut a handsome figure on a horse supplied by the United States, and that you look deuced attractive dancing the quadrille in a uniform supplied by the United States.
I tried to do my duty, sir. Sometimes I wondered if our time wasn't being wasted.
Do you feel that at all times you did your full duty as a soldier and as a citizen of the United States?
Well,
I thought so. Hard to tell now.
Do you think you disgraced the uniform of the United States?
At the time, I may not have been aware. I may have misunderstood.
As an officer in the Army of the United States, do you care to make any statement regarding your loyalty to the United States?
Oh, damn the United States. I wish I may never hear of the United States again.
What did he say?
What was that?
He said, damn the United States.
I wish I may never hear of the United States again.
The traitor. That's treason.
Order! Order! I declare this court temporarily adjourned. Prisoner, hear the sentence of the court. The court decides, subject to the approval of the president, that you shall have your wish fulfilled, that you shall never hear the name of the United States again.
Philip Nolan, former lieutenant in the United States Army, was stripped of the insignia on his uniform and placed aboard a ship. For it was decided that his wish and his sentence might best be fulfilled at sea. The captain of the ship received instructions from the office of the Secretary of Navy, which he passed on to his officers.
You will take the prisoner on board your ship and keep him there with such precautions as shall prevent his escape. He is to be exposed to no indignity of any kind, nor is he ever unnecessarily to be reminded that he is a prisoner.
But under no circumstances is he ever to hear of his country or to see any information regarding it. And you will especially caution all the officers under your command to take care that in the various indulgences which may be granted, this rule in which his punishment is involved shall not be broken.
And so Philip Nolan stepped on shipboard for the first time. It was in 1807. He was pleasant and friendly enough, taking his strange sentence lightly, and got along well with the men. They were cautioned not to speak of the United States in his presence, and the books, magazines, and newspaper which he read had all references to his native country cut from their pages before they were passed into his hands. It was a long, tiresome voyage with little to do, and sometimes the men off duty gathered to take turns reading aloud from whatever books were available. At the Cape of Good Hope, someone had the fortune to borrow a number of new English books. One of them, The Lay of the Last Minstrel by Sir Walter Scott. Philip Nolan, who read aloud very well, took his turn at reading one day. And those stirring rhymes of the Scotch border held us all spellbound.
Say, that's not bad. For poetry.
No, that's as good as a story any day.
Go ahead, Nolan, give us some more.
Just as soon as I wet my tongue, gentlemen. Ah, there. All right, this is the way it goes on. Breathes there the man with soul so dead, who never to himself hath said, this is my own, my native land. Whose heart hath ne'er within him burned, as home his footsteps he hath turned from wandering on a foreign strand. If such there breathe, go, mark him well. For him no minstrel raptures swell. High though his titles, proud his name, boundless his wealth, as wish can claim, despite these titles, power and pelt, the wretch consented all in self. Here, someone else take this book. And the devil take it. Or the sea. There. Excuse me, gentlemen. Good day.
Philip Nolan disappeared into a stateroom. And we didn't see him again for 2 months. For no one was allowed to visit his quarters. When we saw him again, he was older, expressionless, and kept more to himself. But even he couldn't escape the excitement on shipboard when we found we were heading for home.
I'll tell you what I'm going to do when I get home. I'm going to take an oar and start walking inland.
When someone asks me what I'm carrying on my shoulder, that's where I'm going to settle down. I'll know I'm far enough away from the sea.
It'll even be good to see the farm again. When I was a lad, I never thought I'd be coaxing to bring in firewood, but I'll chop down the whole woodlot for some fried chicken and apple pie.
A fella don't think of it very often, but the more you see of the world, the better you like those good old United States.
Quiet. Here comes Nolan.
Yeah, pipe down the talk of home.
Why can't he stay in his stateroom where he belongs?
Whenever Philip Nolan appeared, conversation ceased, for all talk was about the land of which he was not to hear. More lonely than ever, he stood on deck often in the night, staring at the dark horizon beyond which lay all the things the men talked about. Even the wind seemed a whisper of home as we drew nearer. And though he walked alone, Philip Nolan stood at the rail hour after hour, listening to the wind. But then, whatever thoughts he had behind that expressionless face were interrupted by the captain's orders.
Mr. Nolan, you'll gather your belongings and personal effects and prepare to quit this ship. Tomorrow we will meet and you will board another vessel, an outbound vessel which you will join on her cruise.
So the wind changed for Philip Nolan, became again only salt spray, bitter to the taste. 20 times or more they transferred Nolan from one ship to another. His stateroom changed, but one day was like another, one deck like another, one sea like another. But he did remember the blue Mediterranean and the Bay of Naples, for a strange thing happened there. A dance was held on board his ship with the company of lovely ladies, the friends of local government officials and English and American visitors. Even Nolan was invited to attend. And scarcely was the dancing begun when his shipmates were startled to see him approach the most beautiful lady at the ball and to see her smile as he spoke.
Laura! I mean, Miss Rutledge, it seems I must be dreaming to meet you here.
We've been traveling this winter, and we're visiting Naples at present. They told me you'd be here. I wondered if you'd still recognize me.
Well, it seems like a miracle. May I have the honor of a dance, Miss Rutledge?
Of course, Mr. Nolan. It's not Miss Rutledge now, Philip. It's Mrs. Graham.
Oh, I didn't know.
Yes, it's been some years now since I've married. It wasn't long after. It seems forever, doesn't it?
Yes, forever. But you're just the same. And the music, so much the same.
I didn't know whether I should come here or not. Whether I should see you.
I'm glad you did. I can't tell you how glad. Even though things have changed so much. How is everything? Tell me everything about home.
Home? Home, Mr. Nolan. I thought you were the man who never wanted to hear of home again.
Philip Nolan seemed even older after that. But once, when a ship on which he was sailing, one more of the many ships, ran into a duel with a foreign vessel, he suddenly appeared with his shoulders straight, his voice firm, and a different look in his eyes. It was after a round shot had struck a gun crew station, killing the officer and wounding the men. And there he was with a ramrod in his hands.
Come on, lads. Look alive now. Hold your post.
Yes, sir.
We've got the man this gun. Do you hear me?
Yes, sir.
You there. Badly hurt?
I don't think so, sir.
Lend a hand with the loading men.
Right.
I've got her aimed. Now, set her off. That's it, lads. Step lively now. We'll fire her till she melts.
What's going on here? They told me this gun was out of action.
Aye, sir. That's right, Captain.
Well, the gun's been firing, hasn't it? Where's Mr. Harlow?
He's below, sir. He's badly wounded.
Then who's been firing this gun? You, Nolan, what are you doing here?
Just showing them how we used to handle cannon in the artillery, sir. All ready there?
Aye, sir.
Touch her off.
Well, that was a hit, Nolan. Let the artillery proceed.
They say the captain recommended that Nolan be pardoned. Perhaps he did. But by this time, the man without a country had been forgotten. Those who had ordered his punishment were dead or had retired from public life. Those who came into authority simply carried out the orders that had been given. The men who sailed with Nolan in later years scarcely knew his story. He became a legend and a myth rather than a living man. This tall, spare, white-haired figure, weathered by the wind of the seven seas, by the suns of every clime. There were those who came to know and love him well, though there was always a barrier between them. It was one of these, an old shipmate of mine, who wrote me when at last Philip Nolan's long voyage to nowhere drew to a close. It was written from the United States corvette Levant.
I try to find heart to tell you that it is all over with poor old Nolan. The other day, the doctor called me to his stateroom, and I entered with him. This was the first time, as far as I know, that anyone had ever been there. Nolan was lying in his bunk, and the doctor's glance confirmed what I could see. The end was not far off. Hello. Hello there. I'm glad that you could come. Well, you're tired. Perhaps you should rest. I'll come back. No. I see you're surprised to see my cabin. Yes, I had no idea. Why, it's like a shrine. The flag on the wall, stars and stripes, picture of George Washington. Map of the United States. Yes, I drew it myself. Drew it from memory. You see, here I have a country. A country of my own. A country few have loved, perhaps, as much as I. For I've had time to think of what it means.
I'm sure if they'd known, Mr. Nolan, if they had only realized, you'd have gone free long ago.
That's not important now. Indeed, it never was. My punishment was just enough. It was only to have my wish fulfilled.
But loving her so, you might have served your country better.
Perhaps I have served her well. Better than if I'd been easily pardoned. If because of me, others realize what it means to be without a country. But tell me, what has happened to her? Surely there's no harm in telling me now.
No, there's no harm now. Your map's a little out of date, Mr. Nolan. There are new stars in the flag, with more to come.
New stars?
Yes.
New states?
Yes.
Draw them in my map for me, will you?
Very well, Mr. Nolan, as best I can. The settlers pushed on westward, found homesteads on the prairie and the plains.
Yes.
Indiana, Illinois, Kansas, Missouri.
Oh, yes.
They fought the winters in the north and pushed the frontier back through the wilderness. Michigan, Wisconsin, Minnesota.
Yes.
They died at the Alamo that Texas might be free and then become a state.
They told him of the riverboats linking New England cities, of the Overland Trail and the Pony Express, of the gleaming rails burrowing through mountains and leaping across canyons to span a continent. They told him of the mines, following the seams of coal deep underground, of the smoke of the iron forges promising great cities, of the cattle herds roaming the grasslands of the West, of the 49ers rushing to the gold fields of California, and of the emigrants from every land finding new homes and new hope in America. They told him of the strife between the North and South, of the war between brothers, of a man named Grant who promised victory for the Union, and of Abraham Lincoln, who longed to bind up the nation's wounds with charity for all and malice toward none.
You mean this one? The Book of Prayer? That's right. Read where it's marked. For ourselves and our country. For ourselves and our country.
Oh, gracious God, we thank thee.
Oh, gracious God, we thank thee.
That notwithstanding our manifold transgressions of thy holy laws.
That notwithstanding
our manifold transgressions, of thy holy laws.
Thou hast continued to us thy marvelous kindness. Doctor, I guess there's no need to go on.
At last, he had found a home and a country. He took his Bible and found a slip of paper, on which he had written,
"Bury me in the sea. It has been my home, and I love it. But will not someone set up a stone for my memory at Fort Adams or Orleans, that my disgrace may not be more than I ought to bear? Say on it, in memory of Philip Nolan, lieutenant in the Army of the United States. He loved his country as no other man has loved her. But no man deserved less at her hands."
So lived and died Philip Nolan, the man without a country. There is no stone for his memorial, only his story, a memorial more lasting than a monument. Whenever it is heard, let each of us remember that any man is without a country who, by his sneers, or by looking backward, or by revealing his country's secrets to her enemy, checks for 1 hour the movements which lead to peace among the nations of the world, or weakens the arm of the nation in her determination to secure justice between man and man, and in general, to secure the larger life of her people.
The Man Without a Country, by Edward Everett Hale, is one of the world's great novels brought to you each week by the NBC University of the Air. Next week, we will begin a four-part version of The Rise of Silas Lapham by William Dean Howells, and we hope you'll be listening. To add to your enjoyment of this series, we recommend the Handbook of the World's Great Novels, which you may obtain by sending 25 cents to World's Great Novels, Post Office Box 30, Station J, New York 27, New York. That's Post Office Box 30, Station J, New York 27. The Man Without a Country was adapted for radio by Jack C. Wilson. The music was composed by Emil Soderstrom, and the orchestra was directed by Bernard Berquist. The entire production was under the direction of Homer Heck. Maurice D.